I think, as I've mentioned to some of you, this is a very hot topic of research. About 10 years ago, string theorists claimed that using ADS-CFT, which is absolutely remarkable mathematical formalism, whereby you describe gravity in a space-time by a quantum field theory on the boundary of the space-time. So using this formalism, it was believed to be clear that you could describe black holes in a manner which is consistent with quantum mechanics. And so much so that Stephen Hawking accepted this and agreed that he'd lost his bet. He bet that information was lost when it fell into a black hole, and he gave up on his side of the bet. But the other person on his side of the bet was Kip Thorne, and he refused to give up. And so the person who won, it wasn't quite clear whether he'd won or he hadn't won. But then in the last couple of years, people have really revised this opinion. And there are two very interesting stories. It's not clear if either of them is correct. But one of them is called fuzzballs, that black holes in string theory, it is alleged, do not look like black holes in general relativity. They don't have a horizon. There's no surface beyond which you can never communicate with the outside world. And so that's one story that has emerged. And if it's true, it means that black holes, even on a large scale, are not described by general relativity. On the other side, there's been a debate about firewalls, according to which if you fell into a black hole, the moment you crossed this horizon, you would be fried in a burst of intense radiation. And that's also very, very controversial but very exciting topic. And so I would say at the moment, all bets are off. General relativity gives very beautiful and clear answers. The same cannot be said for string theory or ADS-CFT. There's a lot of discussion about it, but that's what makes it very exciting. So from this point of view, it's obviously most important to understand what general relativity says first. And then try to see if these rival theories have anything to offer. So we're going to extend the Schwarzschild solution into the black hole interior. Okay, so I'm going to write the metric, or the line element. I'm going to write the line element as minus 1 minus rs over r. Rs is the Schwarzschild radius, dt squared plus 1 minus rs over r inverse, dr squared plus r squared d omega 2 squared. And at r equals rs, the metric is singular. And we shall show this is just a coordinate singularity. We'll show that in a moment. And then, as I've emphasized before, for r less than rs, this is still a solution of the Einstein equations. And in fact, it is the solution describing the black hole interior. But it's the question of how you match the interior to the exterior is critical. Oops, I shouldn't have done that, sorry. For r less than rs, the coordinate r is time-like. Okay, so r really is the time, and t is space-like. Okay, so that means if I travel, if I keep all the other coordinates fixed, and if I travel some distance in r, then the line element is negative. That means it's a time-like direction. And if I travel only in t, that's the line element is positive. And so t becomes a space-like direction inside the black hole. So let's consider radial light rays, okay, or geodesics, which are null. So if they're radial, then we can forget about the d omega part of the line element. The photon or particle, the photon is not moving in the angular directions at all. And so we just set ds squared equals 0 and d omega 2 squared equals 0 because it's radial. And so then we get an equation relating dt and dr, which is that dt is plus or minus dr over 1 minus rs over r. Which is equal to plus or minus dr 1 plus rs over r minus rs. And so we can integrate this to get t is plus or minus r plus rs log r over rs minus 1. This is for r bigger than rs, plus a constant. And now if we draw a picture, here is t and r, rs is here. And if we go to large values of r, then this quantity r is much bigger than the log. And you can see basically we have t equals plus or minus r with a small correction. And so so the picture out here at large r is that there are these two lines nearly at 45 degrees, and the light rays, in fact, look like that. The light cone would look like that at large distances. And we would call this light ray, this is a radial light ray, this one is going in, and this one is going out. Okay? Everything else would be going at some angle, and we're not going to worry about those. We'll just worry about the radial light rays. And there are obviously two of them. Now, if we look at this formula, obviously t equals plus r is the one going out. So let's write it this way. Out and in for r bigger than rs. Now, when you consider a point near to rs, okay, what's going to happen is this, this term R here is basically going to RS, so not doing anything funny. But the logarithm is blowing up. When R goes to RS, that log becomes the log of a very small number. And in fact, it becomes negative, right? So when you sketch the curves, what you're going to find is that T is going to diverge on one of these curves. T is going to diverge as R hits RS. So the light cone picture becomes something like this. And so as you tend towards RS, the light cone shrinks to zero in these coordinates. Now, when you come across the other side, then the whole picture looks extremely different. On the for R less than RS, the solution is plus or minus R plus RS log 1 minus R over RS, because R is less than RS, plus constant. This is R less than RS. So again, there are two solutions. And for example, if I look as R tends to 0, you can see that actually this R here gets canceled by the minus R from expanding the log. Right, so log of 1 minus R over RS is minus R over RS. The R cancels, and this whole thing goes like minus R squared over 2 RS. Okay, so what you notice from this is that the plus curve actually has T decreasing with R. And so actually, this is reversed. That if I take the plus solution, that's the ingoing light ray. And the light cone picture looks something like this. I'll explain this in a moment. And then if we follow, if we take a light ray out here, okay. So remember, when you go inside RS, then actually R is the time, and so your light cones should R is the time-like variable, and so the light cone should be this way with rotations going around it like that. Okay, so the light cone basically, when you hit R equals RS, it gets squashed to zero on this side, and then it reappears infinitely flattened, okay, on this side, gradually unflattens as you head towards R equals RS. Okay, so it's doing something extremely violent in these coordinates, the light cone structure. So that again suggests that these coordinates are not very good. So let's change coordinates. To ingoing Eddington So the idea of this is very physical. It's to say that along a null ray, we have these solutions, right, where the constant doesn't change. And so why don't we change coordinates to ones in which this whole quantity in the equation is actually the coordinate? Because in those coordinates, the null ray will just be that coordinate being zero, or constant, okay, that coordinate being constant. So let's change coordinates in which the coordinates in which the ingoing null rays are u equals constant. So you should think about these in Minkowski space. If I had a null ray going in the x direction, I could pick a coordinate x minus t, right? And if the light ray is going as x equals t plus some constant, then the quantity x minus t is constant on the null ray. So that's an obvious choice of coordinates. And so we let u equal to t plus r plus log r over rs minus 1. So we're imagining starting outside the black hole, do this coordinate transformation, and then we will follow the black hole metric across the Schwarzschild radius in these coordinates. Notice, what I'm going to do is the following. Actually, I'm going to change coordinates where I put a modulus sign in here, because I want my coordinate u to be defined, even when r equals rs. So it's defined even when r is less than rs. Note, obviously, it is singular. The coordinate transformation is singular at r equals rs. Is singular at r equals rs. We shouldn't be worried about that because we believe that the original coordinates are singular. The only way you're going to make singular coordinates non-singular is by doing a singular coordinate transformation, which undoes the singularity of the original coordinates. Okay? We shouldn't be worried about this. If we believe the original coordinates are singular, okay, singular just means a bad coordinate system. In fact, to remove a coordinate singularity, a coordinate singularity you must do a singular coordinate transformation.
Yep. Mm-hmm. If the coordinate transformation is singular at this point, isn't it also then not a diffeomorphism? So it's not
like it's not the original metric was not okay.
Okay,
you started with something that wasn't okay.
But it still seems like that we have no reason to believe that like the physics should remain the same under this transformation at that point, because this isn't a diffeomorphism.
You started with something which was sick.
Yeah.
Okay. It was sick everywhere. It was sick only at one point. It was fine everywhere else. So what you do is you say, okay, well, let me change coordinates everywhere else. There's no problem with that. The fact the coordinate transformation was singular at this point doesn't really matter because I changed everywhere else. That was fine. the metric is fine in the new coordinates. It was a good diffeomorphism. Now I look at the new coordinates and say, well, these ones extend fine across RS. So the other coordinates I just forget about. They were bad coordinates. That's, way. Yeah. Go ahead.
Put it another way. It's a diffeomorphism whenever you have overlap. Right, between the two. Yeah, that's all I need.
Sorry, say that again. Say that again.
I mean, it is a diffeomorphism on the region of overlap, so that's okay.
Yes, that's right. There's a region where the first coordinate system was good, outside RS or inside RS. Just ignore it at R equals RS, a bad system. Now I change coordinates to these new coordinates. They completely agree, outside RS or inside RS. But around RS, the new coordinate system is fine. There's no coordinate singularity. The old one was bad. So don't worry about it. Okay. I say don't worry about it, but this is a very subtle point. Okay. So by all means, worry about it. Okay, so let's just try this coordinate transformation, accepting that it is singular at R equals RS. But nevertheless, the whole procedure is guaranteed to give us a solution of the Einstein equations, right? So once I've got the new coordinates, I know they will solve the Einstein equations. And so it's completely legitimate just to forget about the old coordinates and start afresh with these new coordinates. Okay, so you can use the old coordinates to motivate new coordinates and then treat the new coordinates on their own to see if they're singular or not. So obviously I've chosen this coordinate, u. So u is a constant on an ingoing light ray. That's going to help me in sketching the space-time. But for the moment, let's just regard this as a coordinate transformation. So du is equal to dt plus dr over 1 minus rs over r. Okay, and the modulus sign makes no difference because the modulus sign makes no difference. I mean, if r is bigger than rs, I get, differentiating this with respect to rs, I get 1 over rs, 1 over r over rs minus 1. For r less than rs, when I differentiate, this is really 1 minus r over rs. And differentiating with respect to r, I'm going to get 1 over rs with a minus sign because of this. And then 1 over 1 minus r over rs. And you see the two minus signs cancel. And so I get exactly this result for either r bigger or r less than rs. And so this tells me that dt is du minus dr over 1 minus rs over r. And so now I can just substitute in the line element for dt and eliminate the first term. Ds squared equals minus 1 minus rs over r. Du squared from here and then from here you see the very top line there. If I calculate the dt squared, I'm going to get a cross term, which is du dr with the denominator. The denominator is going to cancel the numerator. So I get plus 2 du dr plus r squared d omega 2 squared. Yep.
Is there an rs missing multiplying the logarithm?
Sorry?
In the coordinate transform.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, thank you very much. There's an rs there. And so, indeed, this RS cancels that one. Thank you. Yeah, by dimensions, you can see there must be an RS. I'm always trying to keep the dimensions of everything correct. I have taken C to be equal to 1. As you can see, I've put time and space as the same dimensions. OK, any questions? So that's the new metric. Yeah.
What happened to the DR? Sometimes you have du and dt plus.
So let's just calculate it. Du equals dt plus dr plus, then I use this business. Okay, so here I have dr over r over rs minus 1. And this will all equal to, this will all equal to, okay, sorry, I thought this was obvious. R over RS, dr over RS minus 1. That's equal to dr over 1 minus RS over R. Okay?
So you
added
it there when you took it,
shouldn't
it be dr times dx times rs over r over rs?
No, I should have done this slower.
Chain rule.
Let's start again. Okay, so differentiate this. D of this with respect to r. D of this, I get rs outside. Differentiate with respect to r, I get 1 over rs. Right, because from this times the inverse, 1 over rs minus 1. Okay? Which is exactly that. Okay, so that's the metric in the new coordinates. And if you look at rs equals r, sorry, r equals rs, the metric g is equal to 0 in the UU direction. So here would be U, R, theta, phi. 0 in the UU direction. It has an off-diagonal element in the RU, right? So there's a factor of 2 here. So GUR is 1 and GRU is 1. It has nothing in the RR direction. And then in theta, phi, it's the usual R squared and then r squared sine squared theta. Okay? That's completely non-singular. Right? Non-singular. The eigenvalues of this matrix, the eigenvalues of this matrix 0, 1, 1, 0 are just plus 1 and minus 1. So there's one time-like direction and one space-like direction. The time-like direction would be u plus r, and the space-like u minus r. So in these coordinates, the metric is completely non-singular. So that confirms that that r equals rs is just a coordinate singularity. So these coordinates extend nicely across r equals rs. Okay, there's no problem at r equals rs. And so now what we can do, we can follow an ingoing light ray. Which is just a curve, u equals constant, across rs. And on such an ingoing light ray, we will get into the interior of the black hole. And now we can write down the formula that, of course, that that u is constant, u equals constant, equals t, well, that implies, so look at the definition of u, that implies that t equals minus rs log, and now we're inside the black hole, so this will be 1 minus r over rs Okay, so if you follow the light ray and go back to these singular coordinates, because they were valid inside the black hole, so there's no reason why you can't use them inside the black hole, then you get the following picture. T and R. Okay, so let's imagine following a light ray coming in as R is heading, as R is decreasing, as R is decreasing into the black hole. So T is minus R, so as R decreases, the time increases, okay, out here. So the light ray comes in. Let me draw it here. The light ray comes in, T equals minus R. As R approaches RS from outside, in fact, let me put the logarithm here, because I'm going to use this. Let's put the absolute sign. I'm going to use this formula outside and also inside and try to see how these things match together using the fact that the U coordinates were smooth. So outside the black hole, T equals minus R, the log is small at large R. As I come in towards RS, this log will go to minus infinity. The log of a small number is minus infinity. So T diverges in the positive direction. Okay, so that's what a null ray will do. It'll head off to T equals plus infinity. That's basically a signal that for the observer at infinity who uses T at their time, they will never actually see the null ray cross the horizon. According to them, the null ray will only hit the horizon at T equals plus infinity. But we can use this equation even inside the black hole. And you see, once we cross RS, this number, if we're slightly less than RS, this number is still a small number. The log is negative. And so T is positive, plus infinity. And T will do this. And then finally, as R goes to 0, the log goes to 0. And T goes to, T will go, sorry, this is plus a constant, the value of U. And so T goes to this value of U for the light ray. Okay, so that is an ingoing light ray as tracked in the UR coordinates and then translated back into the singular coordinates. So notice the key point here, the direction of time R is decreasing R equals increasing time. Okay, why? Because I followed a null ray whose time was increasing as I started at infinity. The null ray was on the future part of the light cone. I followed this in. It's the same light ray. If everything is regular, there's no way the direction of time can change on that null ray. And as I follow it in, I find that same null ray is now decreasing in R. So it must be that within this region of space-time, decreasing R is increasing time. And that's actually why we had to hit the singularity, because there's no way out of it. There's an end to time at R equals 0, and the null ray So that's very interesting, that in these U coordinates, UR coordinates, everything is regular. I can look back and say, okay, how do I glue the two coordinate patches, R bigger than RS and R less than RS, together? And when I glue them together using these ingoing null coordinates, I find the direction of increasing time is decreasing R inside the black hole. Now we can do something a little bit more detailed. We can sketch the light cones in these UR coordinates. So let's just write out the metric again. 1 minus RS over R du squared plus du dr plus R squared d omega 2 squared.
One thing on the light ray that incoming from outside of the black hole, shouldn't the curve go to negative R and to negative infinity?
No. Sorry, why negative R? R is positive.
Yeah, but you have the for you constant T is minus R minus R. Is
yeah, so at large R, the minus R term wins. Minus R term
right.
wins.
So,
so that's this slope, negative slope. Okay, at large R.
Okay, yeah.
T is minus R.
Right, and
slope is minus 1 at large R. Now, as I come in, as R decreases, that log is going to go to minus infinity. But there's minus sign in front of it.
Oh, okay.
So T is going to go to plus infinity.
Sure.
When I go for R less than RS, T comes back from plus infinity. Okay. And as R tends to 0, T tends to this constant, which is just U. Okay, so here's the metric in the new coordinates. And let's sketch the light cones in these coordinates. Because these are supposed to be non-singular coordinates, so we should be able to draw the light cones in these coordinates. So all we have to do is solve that this part of the metric equals 0. Okay, to find the null rays, and the radial light rays are, so what's the solution of this being 0, right? Either du is 0, or du equals dr over this factor. So du equals 0, or du equals 2 dr over 1 minus rs over r. In fact, let me write that a different way. That's fine. So what is du? Well, let's noting that u was defined as a null. Let me see what's the way to say it. Let me just write it down. So if we set u to equal let me say it the following way. Remember, the way we defined u is that it will be constant on ingoing null rays. Okay? So let's now change from u to some time coordinate, a new time coordinate, such that in the new coordinate, the new time coordinate, the null ray is actually at 45 degrees. Okay? So define a new time, T prime, and T prime will be such that U equals T prime plus R. And so this implies that the ingoing null rays will be R equals U minus T prime. Okay, U is going to be constant on those null rays, and so they're going to, this is i.e. a line at 45 degrees. Yeah?
So we said a radial light ray is a U equals
constant. Yeah.
So where does the second option come from? The du is 2R. 2dr over 1.
I'm trying to find the radial null rays. The way I find the radial null rays is by setting ds squared to be 0.
But don't we already know that corresponds to u equals constant?
That's u equals constant is this one.
Right.
That's the ingoing null ray. There's another one, which is the outgoing one.
Oh, I see.
Okay. So yes, you're right. This one is ingoing, and this one is outgoing.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, I just want to sketch both of them. Okay, so let's. It's like a guillotine. Sorry. It never quite does the right thing. No. Okay. All right. Sorry. I wanted this one above that one, but never mind.
Wait, Neil, before you erase that.
Yep.
So on that diagram that you drew of the path of the light ray.
Yeah.
That's covered up right now. So if you ask like the observer at time equals or r equals infinity, like at a certain time on the watch, like 10 a.m. on today, like where is the photon or where's the photon? Then they'll get two answers for r. So like how?
No. Oh, I see. No. So, bear in mind that the TR original TR coordinates are bad coordinates. At this point, okay. So when we're doing this when we're drawing this diagram, we shouldn't try to use them inside RS. They were fine outside RS, but we shouldn't really try to use them. What I'm trying to do is to you know, there is some other metric inside here, but don't let's use T and R inside. Okay. I'm not going to use it inside. I'm just going to. So what I'm saying is it is a solution of the Einstein equations, but how you glue it together with the outside guy is completely determined by the UR coordinates. Okay, so this is just an interpretation. Do not take this to mean that there are two values of time in the outside. You'll see. It's all a little confusing at the moment. It's going to become absolutely 100% clear. You should be confused. Okay. And I think, was it Emily? Emily is your name? Yeah, so she asked a key question yesterday, which was, when we solved the geodesic equation, we found a particle coming out of the black hole, right? With high energy, it just went sailing out of the black hole. What the hell is going on there? We're going to find a couple of more paradoxes. That's one key paradox. This is another strange thing, is that time is decreasing. Okay, in these coordinates, I follow a photon in and I find time is going down again. That's bad indication something's wrong. And we'll find yet another one. And all of these are actually going to be clues as to what's really going on inside the black hole. So to a large extent, I'm presenting a lot of confusing facts. And then eventually they're going to be completely resolved. I claim. Okay. So let's see, where are we? I didn't really want to decrease. That's fine. We've defined a new time. And so the outgoing null rays in these new coordinates are given by that formula, let me write it this way. So du is 2 dr over 1 minus rs over r. This is, of course, equal to dt prime plus dr. And so now we can get the relationship between t prime and r on the outgoing, dt prime and r and dr on the outgoing null rays. Okay, so dt prime equals, and the answer is this, r plus rs over r minus rs dr. Let me just check that. So pull the dr over here. I get 2 over 1 minus rs over r minus 1 times dr. So I get in the numerator 2 minus 1. So it's 1 plus rs over r. And then the denominator 1 minus rs over r. So I end up with this formula. Okay. And the ingoing null rays, so this would be outgoing. And the ingoing are just dt equals minus dr ingoing. So just from these, I can now sketch the null rays. Okay, here's t prime, the new time coordinate. Here's r. Here is rs. And the ingoing ones are really easy in these coordinates, because they're just lines at 45 degrees. Okay, so the ingoing ones look like this. That's how we defined the ingoing coordinates. And the outgoing ones, out at large r, this is basically 1 at large r. And so the outgoing ones look like this at large r. And the light cones would be like this. Okay, but as r tends towards rs, this coefficient is going to infinity. And so that means that the outgoing guys are getting steeper. Okay, so they're actually, so they're actually doing this like that. Okay, so what you see here, and then at r equals rs, dt prime is infinity times dr, which means that they're vertical lines. Okay, so what you see here is the tipping of the light cone. And as you cross r equals rs, the light cone tips into the black hole. And so if I go inside the black hole, dt prime is a negative number times drs, and here's the light cone. Okay, so in these coordinates, everything is great, but you are simply forced to go forwards into the singularity.
So you have the geodesic solution that's just staying put on the event horizon?
You're saying this one?
Yeah.
Think about that. That's exactly right. So basically, imagine sitting on the event horizon. I could send a light ray inwards, and that's going to be fine. It's going to hit the center. And I try and send one outwards. It just doesn't get anywhere. That's exactly right. Okay, so just to emphasize again, this t prime and r are good coordinates. Okay, there's nothing wrong with the metric anywhere. You might say, let's be completely happy with that. Okay, but a little fly in the ointment arises, which is, why did I pick t plus r? Why did I pick ingoing light ray? Ingoing null coordinates. What's wrong with outgoing null coordinates? It's a bit like Emily's question. Okay, so let's try those. Whoop. That was good. I'm going to leave that one up. Sorry, I'll do one more. So we want to compare them. So actually, in this picture, you see very clearly what I was saying here, that the choice of ingoing coordinates dictates the direction of increasing time inside the black hole. Okay? because you see from this light cone picture that increasing time means you stay inside the future light cone. That means R decreases. Okay? Let's try changing coordinates to outgoing null GDs of coordinates about outgoing. Okay, so the let V, so if U is T plus R, V is going to be T minus R. So let's take our formula here for the outgoing null GD6 for R bigger than RS, and use that to choose a coordinate transformation to coordinates in which the outgoing GD6 will simply be V equals constant. So let V equals T minus R minus RS log modulus R over RS minus 1. And if we do the same calculation, we'll find ds squared is equal to minus 1 minus RS over R dv squared minus 2 dv dr plus r squared d omega 2 squared, right? Also, regular is the opposite of singular. It's also regular at r equals rs. So in these coordinates, the metric is also absolutely fine at r equals rs. So these are also good coordinates. But notice the following. If I try to determine, if I try to go back to the TR coordinates and see what it implies, notice in this formula, for outgoing null geodesic, we have T equals plus RS log mod R over RS minus 1, plus constant. And so if I go to RS, at large R, T is plus R. This thing is just going out. As I go backwards towards R equals RS, this log goes to minus infinity. So this goes off to minus infinity. Okay. As I go to R less than RS, the log is minus infinity. And then as R tends to 0, this goes to a constant. And what this implies is the direction of increasing time is increasing R. Okay, so in these coordinates, increasing time, the direction of increasing time. R is the time, remember, is increasing R. Okay, now we've got a direct contradiction. We've got two coordinate systems, both regular, okay, at R equals RS. In one of them, R decreasing was the future light cone. In the other one, R increasing is the future light cone. And that's Emily's particle coming out of the black hole. So what the hell is going on? All right, we've got a blatant blatant contradiction with the ingoing null coordinates. Can anyone imagine what the resolution is? a blatant contradiction. Ingoing null coordinates in ingoing null coordinates are decreasing is increasing time, and in outgoing null coordinates are increasing is increasing time. Can't both be right. Yes?
If we transform coordinates from u to v, r goes to minus r, so outgoing u means ingoing v. Like, with u equals t plus r plus other stuff, and u equals t minus r minus other stuff. So, like, if you wanted to talk between the coordinates, you have to flip r whenever you flip coordinates.
So. Okay. Still, it's very weird. Okay. R is a single quantity, right? So, as I said, they can't both be right. But maybe they are both right. But what does that mean? There you go. There's actually two different copies of the interior of the black hole. And the ingoing gets you one of them, and the outgoing gets you the other one. Okay? And that took people a long time to understand. Actually, each describes a different interior r less than rs. And it turns out there are two interiors, okay, to a black hole. And that was really only understand. So there are two versions. There are two versions with opposite senses of increasing time, both connected to the same exterior, okay, so if I have a null ray that comes out, and I can say, where did it come from? Well, it came from an interior in which r increasing was the direction of increasing time. And if I send a light ray into a black hole, it goes into some place. And the place it goes is a region of space-time where decreasing r is increasing time. Okay, so it's all very confusing until Martin Kruskal came along and used both at once, found how to use both coordinates at once. And by the way, Martin Kruskal was an undergraduate at the time. And he thought this was obvious, and he didn't publish it. And it took people some time for the news to propagate. But Martin Kruskal was just an undergraduate fiddling around with some equations he'd seen in GR. So you put these together. This is what you get by fiddling around with equations. Okay, Kruskal. And the original paper is Physical Review, 119, 1743, 1960. And so Kruskal said the following: for r bigger than rs, well, let's use both of these coordinates. U will define u to be t plus r plus rs log r over rs minus 1. And v is t minus r minus rs log r over rs minus 1. And this, as we've said, this is constant for outgoing null rays. And this is constant for ingoing null rings. So now we calculate, as before, du and dv are equal to dt plus or minus dr over 1 minus rs over r. And so ds squared, the line element for Schwarzschild, is just given by this, 1 minus rs over r times du dv plus r squared d omega 2 squared. Okay, let's just see that. So du times dv, I get two factors. I get, well, this quantity, the dt plus dr times the dt minus dr, the cross term cancels, and we get minus dt squared, with this prefactor, and then the dr squared with square of the denominator, which gives us the inverse factor. So that looks quite nice. But we have a formula that r plus rs log r over rs minus 1 is equal to u minus v over 2. Okay, so I can solve this equation for r in terms of u minus v. You see, what I want to do now is to eliminate r and just have u and v as the coordinates, and replacing, we've already got rid of t. So I want to now express r in terms of u and v, and then I'll have everything in terms of u and v. And that's essentially what Kruskal did. So that's a formula relating r to u and v. And so from this we learn that r over rs minus 1 is equal to e to the minus r over rs, e to the u minus v over 2rs. Okay, so I just pulled the r over to the right-hand side, divided by rs, and exponentiated. Okay, and so this gives us, so the factor in the metric, 1 minus rs over r is equal to rs over r times e to the minus r over rs, e to the u minus v over 2rs. Okay, so the metric I've now expressed in terms of u and v still modulo this factor. So we have ds squared is minus rs over r, e to the minus r over rs, e to the u minus v over 2rs, du dv plus r squared d omega 2 squared. And this is good because it looks... it doesn't look singular anywhere except r equals 0, which we know is a real singularity. So there's nothing we're going to do to get rid of that. And so now Kruskal said, well, let's combine these to form a new set of null coordinates. So we'll set, so now set u to be equal to rs e to the little u over 2rs, and capital V to be rs e to the minus little v over 2rs. Okay, so then du just brings down du brings down a 1 over 2rs. The rs's cancels. We get a half times this factor times du. And the dv, I get a minus sign. Yeah, so this whole object just becomes minus 4 dv. So ds squared is equal to rs over r, 4rs over r, e to the minus r over rs, du dv, plus r squared d omega 2 squared. And finally, set u equals x plus t, and v equals x minus t. And so x is a new radius. And so we obtain ds squared equals 4rs over r, e to the minus r over rs, minus dt squared plus dx squared. So t is a new time, and x is a new radius. And then we've still got this relationship between u and v and r, so where x squared minus t squared is equal to uv is equal to rs squared e to the u minus v over 2rs is equal to rs squared r over rs minus 1 times e to the r over rs. Okay, so where did that come from? That came from here. E to the u minus v over 2rs is equal to that factor, r over rs minus 1. Okay, so that gives this equation. Okay, so this is an equation which expresses little r in terms of capital X and capital T. That gives little r as a function of x squared minus t squared. And when you look at the metric, that's how you should interpret it. Okay, so let's think about this function. And when this function defines little r as a function of x squared minus t squared. Okay, so if you plot this function, you see, for large r, it's growing exponentially as r e to the r. Okay, and then when r equals rs, it's 0. And when r goes to 0, it's minus rs squared. Okay, so that's the function. This quantity, as long as this quantity is positive, there's a unique So this is x squared, this is r, and here's my function. Okay, so as long as x squared minus t squared is positive, it's some value, right? And this will give me the corresponding r. So the function is completely one-to-one, even though I can't express it analytically. It's one-to-one. For each value of x squared minus t squared, there's a single value of r. When this function goes negative, if t is bigger than x, right, it's still one-to-one, but then it fails at a point. So this is only defined. So there only exists an r, exists an r bigger than 0 for x squared minus t squared greater than minus rs squared. But for each value of x squared minus t squared bigger than minus rs squared, the function is perfectly fine. There's a unique r for each value of x squared minus t squared. And that's enough to see the whole metric. Okay, so what we'll do is draw it in T, capital T. Wow, look at that. That's very cool, isn't it? There's a little particle following a geodesic. Okay. Backwards in time. Okay. So I bet I couldn't repeat that. Okay, so here's x and t. And this function looks perfectly fine, defining little r, defining the metric in terms of x and t. But only if x squared minus t squared is bigger than minus rx s squared. So what is this equation? In other words, the place where this breaks down is where t squared equals t squared equals rs squared plus x squared. Okay, well, that's just an equation for a hyperboloid, right? So this is the line where it breaks down. First of all, let's draw the light cones on this picture. T equals plus or minus x. You notice for radial light rays in these Kruskal coordinates, radial light rays have ds squared equals 0, d omega 2 equals 0. So radial light ray is trivial, just dx equals plus or minus dt. So light rays go at 45 degrees. That was the whole point of his coordinates. Okay. So that makes everything much easier. But these fail, or the coordinate transformation doesn't exist beyond here, where this is rs squared. And there's another version here, right, which is minus rs squared. And okay, so that's what the black hole looks like. But to understand it a little more, let us work out what the coordinate little t is. Little t from the formula, the first line on that board, little t is u plus v, right? Because then the logs will cancel. So little t is u plus v over 2. So that's equal to rs log capital V over capital U. And that's rs log modulus x plus t over x minus t. OK, so x equals t is this line. And x equals t is where, have I got the sign right? Sorry, u is x plus t. minus t. Still worried about a sign. U plus V, let me see, where is the relationship between little u and big U? You're right. It should be U over V, shouldn't it? Okay. Minus. Still a little confused. No, that's right. Okay, that's good. So this line is x equals t, right? So as I approach this line, the argument of the log is going to plus infinity, right? So little t is going to plus infinity. So this line here is t equals plus infinity, okay? Because x is going to t. This line here, t is minus x on that line. So the numerator is going to 0. The log of 0 is minus infinity. OK, so this line here is t equals minus infinity. OK? And obviously what happens is that, so t is a function of u over v. It's a function of this ratio. So essentially, you can think of t as a function of the angle in these coordinates. You see, if t is a constant, you just have a straight line in x and t. And so each straight line here is a different value of t. The x-axis is t equals 0, because then obviously the numerator and denominator are equal. So this is increasing t. Great. So that is the black hole exterior, okay, described by the coordinate little t and little r given by that formula. And so that's the outside of the Schwarzschild radius. This coordinate here is this line is t equals plus infinity and r equals rs. Let's see if we can see that. When r equals rs, this is 0. X squared equals t squared, right? So what we see is that the original coordinates were singular in that this whole line is described by t equals plus infinity, r equals rs. But actually, there's a whole line here. There's a whole light cone in the Kruskal coordinates. So this is the interior of the black hole. Okay, r less than rs. And here's another interior. Okay, and that's exactly what Emily foresaw with her deep insight, that you can have a geodesic, particle geodesic, where the particle comes out of the interior, right, into the exterior, and we see it. Even goes off to infinity, that's fine. Or you can have a geodesic in which the particle falls into the interior. And if you send an ingoing null ray, what's it going to do? Well, it has to end up in this region. And increasing time is decreasing r in this region, right? Because this is this line here is r equals 0. And this line here is r equals 0. And so increasing time here is increasing radius for a null ray, whereas here increasing time is decreasing radius. So this is R equals RS. This is R equals RS. And so actually, what Kruskal discovered is there are four regions of space-time. This is called region 1. This is called region 2. This is called region 3. And this is called region 4. Sometimes the four regions of the Schwarzschild solution. Okay, so this is called the maximal geodesic extension of the Schwarzschild. And what that means is that if you take the Schwarzschild metric and you follow geodesics in it, either they're going to hit a singularity, in which case all is lost, they will continue to infinity. There's no other funny points in the space-time. And so this is what the Schwarzschild solution really is. Now, sometimes this is called, and by the way, I want to point out another peculiar feature of it. You see there are two separate infinities. I can run off to spatial infinity away from the black hole this way, or I could run off to spatial infinity this way, and it would still get to flat space. Okay, so there, the black hole is a bridge between two asymptotic flat space-times, asymptotically flat space-times. There are two asymptotic regions. Sometimes this is called a white hole. Okay, because if I live in this space-time, I can just look right into it. But I can see the singularity. This R equals zero is the singularity. And I can see it. Okay, so in fact, everything that exists in this space-time either comes in for infinity or comes out of the singularity inside the white hole. This is also the singularity. And this is called the black hole interior. So in fact, there's an interesting structure here, which there's a bridge. And one way to draw this connection between the two asymptotically flat regions, you can picture it like this. There's a space here with the black hole at its center. And then this space actually connects to another flat space. Okay, through a bridge. And this is called, for reasons I'm not sure why it's called that, but it's called the Einstein-Rosen bridge. Okay, so you have these two flat space times connected through a bridge which bypasses the singularity. You can't actually get there, sadly. Okay, we can't see the other universe. Because light, nothing can go faster than light, and any light from the other universe is going to sail along this line at best and hit the singularity. It's never going to escape into our region. Okay. Likewise, any light from our region, the best it can do is to fall in here and hit the singularity. So we cannot communicate with this other universe. Communicate with the other universe. Too bad. Okay. Nor can they communicate with us. Now, that's a very beautiful picture, and that really is a solution of the Einstein equation, satisfies all the right properties, all the properties of the theory. The metric is locally Minkowski space, everywhere away from the singularity. We can't describe the region past the singularity in general relativity, but everything can be described. Now, very sadly, these things probably don't exist in the universe, okay? They might, but in all the physical processes we know of which form black holes, such as the collapse of a star, unfortunately, the white hole and the region 4 don't exist, okay? And the reason is the following, that so physical or real black holes forming from stellar collapse, forming e.g. from stellar collapse, don't have regions 3 and 4. Okay, and the reason is quite prosaic, that when you form a black hole, the picture would be that at some early time, you've got a star, right? And the Schwarzschild metric is only valid outside the star. So I can think of this as radius. Well, let's call it, let's leave it as x. X is our new radius. And then this object collapses. At a certain moment of time, it falls across its Schwarzschild radius. Okay, R equals RS. And then, of course, everything, all the particles made in the star, must collapse to the singularity. Let's just extend it a little bit. They must all hit the singularity. Okay, so the Schwarzschild metric is only really valid in the exterior region of the star, which describes region 1 and 2. So, unfortunately, these exciting regions don't seem to exist. At least we don't know how they could form. They may exist ab initio in the universe, but we don't know how they could form through the collapse of a black hole. Only regions 1 and 2 would exist. Okay, are there any questions? Yes.
So still, how do you explain that if the energy is very high?
How did we explain that the particle could escape? Because when we solve the geodesic equation, we're using the Schwarzschild metric. We're using it actually everywhere. We used it for R less than RS. When you find that outgoing particle, it's the particle that does this. Just zooms off to infinity. It came out of the white hole. Okay? So you see, the coordinate R is a bad coordinate. If R is bigger than RS, it's describing this region. So you can think of constant R lines like this. This is R equals constant. Okay? And as R goes to RS, those lines become the light cone here. So R bigger than RS, you can use R and T, they're unique coordinates. When R gets less than RS, there are two copies of the spacetime. This copy for R between RS and 0, and this copy between R and RS and 0. And when we describe that outgoing particle, it came from the white hole. Okay. The ingoing particle fell into the black hole. But, yeah, so that's what That's what the calculation was showing. Yep.
If I set R to be a constant, right, then I have hyperboli, which are x squared minus t squared equals to a constant.
Exactly.
But aren't those the ones that...
They're these ones.
Are those ones or the other ones?
If x squared minus t squared is some number which is positive, then it's these ones, right?
Okay.
Because when t is zero, so exactly. So constant R surfaces are exactly hyperboloids out here. When that number is less than zero,
okay,
then they're these ones.
Okay.
Okay. And the transition is exactly R equals RF.
But you see these four regions, are they causally connected to each other?
That's what you can see immediately in the picture, because Kruskal designed the coordinates so that light rays go at 45 degrees. So there's nothing that can go faster than light. So if I try to communicate from here to there, I cannot do it. The best I can do is to emit a light ray right from here, okay? And then, unfortunately, it's just going to be inside the Schwarzschild radius. It can't make it to infinity. So they're causally disconnected.
But then
region 1 and 4 are causally disconnected.
Okay, but region 1 and 2?
1 and 2 are connected, absolutely. I can just shine a torch, and somebody sitting here will see my signal. Unfortunately, it's very difficult for someone to sit here. Because as time marches on, they're going to hit the singularity. Okay, but if an astronaut was here and fell into the black hole, and I'm sitting out here and I send a radio message, watch out, you're going to hit the singularity, he's going to get the radio message and then hit the singularity. Okay. But when he gets the message, he can't communicate back to me, because the best he can do is send a light ray here. Okay, and he can't say, thanks, but no thanks.
And between the two interiors of the black hole, is there any...
No, you can't communicate. So this guy, this white hole,
okay,
can communicate with the exterior, no problem. If it existed in nature,
okay,
there should be objects in the universe that shine out at us directly from their singularity. But they don't seem to exist. And in fact, people argue that these objects would be inconsistent with the laws of thermodynamics. The black hole horizon is associated with entropy. And if you had such objects, then you could, entropy could decrease, black hole entropy could decrease. I mean, you can see that pretty easily, because the white hole could radiate energy, so its mass could change. And so its area could decrease. Whereas the black hole really can't lose any energy, right, because of the light cone. Looks that way. Actually, it radiates Hawking radiation. But classically, it can't lose any energy. All it can do is suck stuff in. Okay, Hawking radiation was so shocking to people, because what Hawking showed is that nevertheless, it's possible due to quantum effects for energy to be radiated off to infinity from this black hole horizon. And that's still a cause of very much discussion.
So one last thing. You're saying that the white hole, I send the light from the white hole, it can go into region 1 of space, right?
Right.
But can it go to region 4 of space?
Yes. Yes, no problem. The white hole can sense. Yeah, you can. Radial light rays are the two 45 degree angles in this diagram. Yeah.
Somebody in the black hole could know that both region 1 and 4 exist.
That's true. So the astronomer, the astronaut.
Much about it.
The astronaut can come here and look out in this direction and say, whoa, there's a whole universe out there. That's correct. So in fact, I once had a very interesting discussion with Chandrasekhar, who's one of the great figures. He figured out stellar evolution, and which combines general relativity with thermodynamics. And And so I had a discussion with him, and I was working on sort of trendy ideas in particle astrophysics. We were worrying about objects called cosmic strings and magnetic monopoles and so on, they're all predicted by grand unified theories. So I gave this talk about it, and Chandrasekhar comes up to me afterwards and says, why do you work on this stuff? He said, you don't know that these theories are true, okay? So I said, that's why I work on them, because I want to test them and I want to find out if they're true. And he said, no, but why don't you choose to work on a theory you know is true, okay, general relativity, and study solutions of that theory, which may be unphysical, okay? Maybe they don't actually exist in the universe, but you know they're right. It was a very interesting perspective. And that was his attitude to general relativity, that he thought, this is obviously true. I don't really care what's out there in nature. But I can explore questions of time and causality and different regions. And that was his whole philosophy. It was very interesting. It takes all kinds of philosophical world views to make great scientists. And yeah, that was his view. Yeah.
Why can't you make a box? Go from 1 to 2, 2 to 4, 4 to 3, and then 3 to 1.
Oh, why can't I go around? Well, I can't go backwards in time. Okay, so at every point in space-time, there's a future and a past. We don't know how to go into the past, unfortunately. Okay, so all I can do is to go somewhere within my future light cone. So if I'm here, I can choose to go anywhere within that light cone. And so I can fall into the black hole, or I can go off to infinity. There's nothing much else I can do. So I cannot form a closed loop because of causality. Okay, so I want to do just one final calculation. Which is just for fun. Actually, no, I've run out of time. So I'll leave that as a little exercise for you to do. Show that the maximum proper time experienced. Sorry? Oh, you did that. Oh, fine. Great. You've done it. So you saw pi RS over 2, right? Okay. Great. Don't show. All right. Thank you very much. Okay.